With Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
9:05 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good Friday morning to you. You're probably aware, the U.S. President and his wife, Dr. Jill Biden, in town today, looking at News Channel right now, watching those scenes of the two of them being greeted at the cottage by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and his wife, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau. I felt the impact already. This morning wasn't too bad. I had a lot of trouble getting out of the station last night, which is kind of funny because, you know, we spent the day talking about road closures, where you could look for road closures and whatnot. We covered the arrival of the president. Of course, the plane touched down during our newscast last night, so we were very aware that he was here in the Capitol, and yet I sort of hit some rolling road closures leaving the building last night, trying to get out to the West End to see at least part of a pretty good hockey game last night, and just sat in it as everyone was kind of pushed back and rerouted as they were coming down through sort of the Sussex Rideau area, which left a nice little overflow in the market. In my defense, I didn't have too many other options as to which way I could go, I don't think. I probably could have done something slightly better than what I did and just sat in traffic for a bunch going, oh, yeah, he's here, pushes everyone aside. But for the most part, I'm hearing things were not too terrible this morning on the morning commute. A few people staying off the roads, perhaps, Chris?
Well, we do have some slowdowns in the middle of the core right now as there are road closures around a hotel. I don't even know if that's for the president or for the first lady or if it's somebody else in the rather large American delegation. However, it must be pointed out that yesterday, Joe and Jill Biden cost you, Patricia Bull,
yes,
Golden Palace egg rolls.
Yes. Yes, that's true. Can I send an invoice or something
you
for that?
Could.
Yeah, so I got a little bit late to the game and I didn't get my Golden Palace egg rolls. I did get some other lovely food and napkins with it and a glass of wine, so I can't really complain too much, but I did have my heart set on the Golden Palace egg rolls, which were pulled away just as I arrived at the Canadian Tire Centre last night. We'll talk about the game in a little bit because the Senators continue to keep it interesting, but very entertaining night last night.
It was.
Yeah. 9:07 on News Talk 580 CFRA. John Krupe is here as well as we get to our Big Five.
Big news.
Even bigger news.
Yeah, great. Let's hear it.
Ottawa at work. Big Five stories.
John, we didn't see you in our little club at the game last night, but I'm sure you had a lovely evening all on your own.
Did I hear you two had a date at the Sen?
We had what you would call me forcing myself, my company on Chris Holsky last night.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And it all worked out really well. We had a really nice view of the action last night. Did you run into any traffic issues because of the presidential visit?
No. The road closures, I mean, Josh Pringle wrote a story for our website, 3 days ago, about what to avoid regarding traffic.
You studied it, memorized
that story. I studied it, and it's very simple. It's just use King Edward and go on the other side, and you're good to go.
Apparently, that was a little jammed up at about 10 o'clock last night, says one of the producers at CTV Morning Live. They said that they ran into a little bit of trouble. So
yeah, after the game, there were a lot of areas that were jammed up because of people taking alternate routes, I guess. So the Western Parkway got jammed at Booth and everything sort of colliding in there because of, I guess, other bridges being cut off. And I don't know really what was happening, but there was a lot of traffic post-game too.
Yeah. So by the way, I want to mention this now because John just brought up Josh Pringle. Josh wrote an excellent piece for ctvnewsottawa.ca yesterday of recommending places for Joe Biden to visit while he's in Ottawa.
Yes.
I don't want to say very much more about it because it might spoil it. But I think everybody, if you want to laugh this morning, head to ctvnews.ca, try to find that article and read it.
I thought you were going to say that we now have confirmation he's going to all of those places. No?
No. It would be spectacular if he did go to all of those
From
places.
From Josh Pringle's mouth to the ears of the U.S. president. And we do not have any confirmation. You mentioned there were some tie-ups in the core that he would be right down here in the market. We do know sort of the official schedule. Every now and then there's an add-on to that official schedule, but we will go through what is happening today, which kicks off with a welcoming ceremony inside West Block at 11 a.m. That's the big event this morning. So coming up in just a couple of hours, Biden will be there. Then there's the bilateral meeting with Trudeau in his West Block office. That happens at 11:20. And some separate events for his wife with Sophie Gregoire Trudeau today. It all culminates in a big dinner this evening before they take off. They're not spending the weekend here in lovely Ottawa in March. I think they're spending it in Wilmington, Delaware, Chris Holsky. But the hope is that out of all of this comes some actual concrete advances. And we're hearing on one of the hot topics today that there has been an agreement. Let's just quickly hear from the former U.S. ambassador to Canada. This is Bruce Hayman.
I think the relationship is in repair mode. It's work in progress.
A work in progress after several years that were very different in terms of U.S.-Canada relations. And of course, no official visit from Donald Trump here to Ottawa. The visit from Biden put off a little bit because of pandemic. So here we are now back into kind of normal mode with some massive issues on the agenda. We are hearing, John Kruppe, that Canada and the U.S. have agreed to have asylum seekers turned back at irregular border crossings across the border, including Roxham Road in Quebec. This was a big deal going in, how they would deal with illegal or irregular migrants. And this coming out just sort of late in the day yesterday, and a little bit more information on this today. What are your thoughts on this, John?
Well, people are actually surprised that there's kind of a deal. Because, I mean, if you ever watch network news or CNN or Fox, you know the story in the United States is not the Canadian border, it's the Mexican border. And I mean, they're not dealing with thousands, they're dealing with millions of migrants. So I'm kind of surprised, and we'll see what that means. I mean, I'm sure President Biden's going to mention it during his address to Parliament today. We'll see what that means, because apparently the deal means that we're going to take more. I mean, the agreement is that the asylum seekers will go back to the United States and make a claim, but we'll see what Canada has to do other than the 15,000 migrants and additional migrants that they're going to take in.
We will talk more a bit later in the morning about some of the importance of this kind of a visit on a historical front and some of what may or may not get accomplished in an in-person visit like this. But I don't know, Chris Holsky, I know because you were out at the game in good time yesterday, you probably were not watching as the plane touched down yesterday. You see that the all traffic halted on the tarmac at the airport. You see the crowd that is there as part of, I guess, the president's entourage per se, the vehicles that are waiting, the beast as they call it, and you see that plane land as it did and come out of the fog, and you kind of feel small in the shadow of the U.S. It's a vital relationship, of course, but what negotiating power we have with this monolith that is the U.S. You kind of look at it in that moment and you think, we are a small player on the world scene.
Well, and we are still a G7 country, but emphasis on seven, because that's typically where Canada is considered on that list. It actually was kind of neat being at Canadian Tire Center during the American National Anthem, knowing that the U.S. president is in Ottawa at the time that that's happening.
Okay, rubbing in my late arrival again.
but this is one thing that, that I'm taking a look at this immigration. I'm actually surprised that a deal was reached on this. But then I got to, because I would consider this entire idea of them closing off, stealing off Roxham Road to be on the very low in the list of priorities for the United States here. However, maybe this has changed because of the nature of the meeting that's happening between Trudeau and Biden. I'm wondering if this Roxham Road agreement is the only solid deal that comes out of the meeting between the two. Discussions apparently are still being finalized. So there may have been plans to announce something like this later on in the day as some degree of progress.
Because now they may have to scramble and find something else.
Well, they might have to do that. We'll see if anything happens, because there are both leaders want something in this meeting that I'm not sure they're going to get. Joe Biden, he would like a bigger commitment from Canada on defense spending, including modernizing NORAD and maybe even sending troops in Canada into what ultimately it may be a no-win scenario by trying to effectively, as soldiers, police Haiti. That does not sound like a very good plan for our military. And at the same time, the United States, while people are talking about mending relationships, we are dealing with a president right now in Joe Biden who is as protectionist, if not more protectionist, than Donald Trump was. Donald Trump was still in favor of building the pipeline from Alberta down towards Florida. Joe Biden canceled it as soon as he got into office. It was one of the first things that he did. He is not as impulsive and, I think, as uninformed with some of the decisions that Donald Trump made, especially when it came to the whole U.S. steel tariffs and based on national security, which was just absolutely preposterous. But I don't think Canada is going to get an economic deal as great as it wants from the United States, and I don't think the United States is going to get a defense deal as great as it wants from Canada. So this could be the one thing that they end up pointing at, Roxham Road, and saying, hey, we did work something out on at least something that was on the agenda.
So to you, John Krupe, do you think that we will see more that is of a concrete nature emerge from the two of them sitting down? Are you more interested and focused today on the address to Parliament and the tone the U.S. president will take in that address?
Yeah, watch the address to Parliament. I know when he was reelected that Chris mentioned, you know, the pipeline. But he has, you know, he has backed away. For example, on the electric vehicles, he's given Mexico and Canada some easements there. So he may talk tough, but I think he's obviously, compared to Trump, he's better news for Canada, 100%. And to your point, Patricia, about Canada being a small player, there is. I checked the New York Times. I checked the USA Today. I checked the LA Times, I taped all three big networks and CNN. There's no mention of Biden being in Canada. None yesterday. Now, today, with the address to Parliament, that'll change, of course. But to your point, and I was imagining, you know, when he got into the beast with FLOTUS, First Lady, what first impression he would have about Ottawa. And the only thing I can think of is, what's with all these potholes?
Oh, man.
He wouldn't see them in the fog in which he came down those steps.
If he took the airport parkway up to Bronson, there was literally like this big construction bump right north of Bronson on Colonel By right now. I hope the motorcade didn't have too bumpy
of a like
ride.
I feel like if anyone has the shock absorbers to take that, it's probably in those vehicles in the motorcade. Absolutely. The fact that it's a little one-day jaunt up north to Canada would not be massive news down in the States, for sure. So in the shadow of all that, just quickly before we go to break, the Ontario government released its budget yesterday, a little bit overshadowed, on track to balancing the budget by 2025, spending about $205 billion of that, still digesting what is or is not coming Ottawa's way. But it seems like the big cities, John Krupe, a little disappointed in this one in terms of what we're not getting.
This budget for the cities is right now, it's a disaster. Financially, it's a disaster. Just to Toronto, Toronto's got a $16 billion budget, and they got a $1 billion hole. Ottawa's, of course, looking for transit funding. They got a $39 million hole in OC Transpo. No mention of making the city whole on Bill 23. That's that bill that takes away development fees from the city because building homes faster. Mm-hmm. So there's revenues, tens of millions of dollars there. I found that the budget actually to be, I know everybody's praising that there's going to be a surplus in a year and there's more health funding. You know, that's great news. But when it comes to the person on the street, there's really, and the family, there's really nothing there. And for cities, it's a disaster.
Your thoughts, Chris?
Well, there really wasn't, I think, any kind of impetus for the province in this state right now, given how we are only roughly about a year removed from an election where they were going to see any kind of degree of handouts from this. And that's definitely what the Liberals and the NDP have latched onto coming out of this, saying, hey, you know, maybe an increase in the child benefit would have been nice, or some kind of subsidy for people trying to sign up kids or youth sports or youth transit. What's interesting to me is that you have the province investing a lot into infrastructure while at the same time leaving cities like Ottawa and Toronto slightly in the lurch when it comes to some of the help that they need for their own operations right now. So while people may be talking about, well, it's nice that some roads got paved or expanded, like the 401 or say the 417 or the 416 or what have you, or whatever kind of work needs to be done there. Well, if we have roads, say in Ottawa, that are crumbling because of our own financial issues, and City Hall is pointing the finger directly at the province for them not coming in to help out on it, I don't think this infrastructure scenario is quite as rosy as perhaps the provincial government wants it to be.
Doesn't Toronto leave a lot of money for rinks, does it?
Toronto and Ottawa got ghosted in this budget. Let's just put it that way.
9:19 on News Talk 580 CFRA. When we come back, we'll talk about the play at the current rink out in Kanata at Canadian Tire Center. Big game last night. The Senators keeping it interesting as well. What do you think about a four-day week for your kids at school? Slightly longer day, but just 4 days. Is it better? Would it be miserable for you? What are your thoughts on this? Because it's happening right here, 9:19 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work.
Tire scores! Oh, that's two scratches on the post for the Cats.
Meow, meow.
And it's 2-0 Ottawa.
Oh, so that's what I missed. That's what I missed when I was on the way out to the rink. The first two goals from DeBrincat, a little meowing there from Gord Wilson on TSN 1200. And here's what I did not miss. This is how crazy it got. This is a wee bit later in the game, and the captain with this one.
Stutzla clears it out, sends it across. Brady Tkachuk, empty net, buries it. 6-2 Ottawa.
This was a very early empty net.
Yeah, and 6 minutes left.
6 minutes left in the game. Like, oh, this is going to be a real blowout. Went on to be a 7-2 win. So they stay in the mix. They keep it interesting. John Krupe, do you like that I get to keep talking to you about the Sens every morning?
Okay, so yeah, a couple of things. Patricia, one, exciting team. Fun to watch, as everybody knows. And an exciting time for the franchise because today the first of a half a dozen groups are in town to kick the tires of the franchise, so for the sale. So this is a, you know, the franchise is, like, who would have thought, like, Forbes said that the Sens were worth, what, $400 million in their last, what, 2 years ago, a year ago? And now they're saying that the team could fetch $900 million? Welcome, yeah. Ottawa, to the big leagues.
Closer to $1 billion, a very good time for them to be shining just a wee bit and playing a little bit above their November selves, Chris. It was fun last night.
Yeah, what a great vibe it was. And I can't believe I'm saying this. I rose to my feet a couple of times towards the end of that game. Me as a Montreal Canadiens fan.
Yes.
Brady Tkachuk's power play goal. When it looked like the team, both the power play and the penalty kill were gassed. And he had just that little extra effort to sneak it in the net.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And also got to see a goal yesterday by the best Austin in the NHL, Austin Watson.
They had been dominating on that power play. They'd been moving it around beautifully, but it had been going and going and going. And we're like, oh, they don't have anything left in the tank here. Not going to happen.
Yeah,
but Brady coming through.
It's like right now, it's like regardless of what happens in the last few games, they have 10 games left. Regardless of what happens, it is a fun time to go and watch this team play. I think hope is still pretty thin at this point. They're going to make the playoffs. There's a chance. It's a small chance, but getting out, watching this team is still a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, real quick, speaking of being gassed, are your kids gassed at the end of a five-day week? Would a four-day week be better or a longer day is no good? Well, the Ottawa French Catholic School Board is piloting a four-day week at two schools. This is because, John Krupe, they can maybe attract more staff this way.
Yeah, so a shortage of staff. The question is, do you want your child to have 38 minutes, almost, 40 minutes a day added between Monday and Thursday? How will that child, you know, cope with that's a long school day, right? The advantage is you get Friday off, but it's a longer school year. It's a longer day. And in the winter, that could be a long day.
Makes those Thursday night games all the more fun.
Yeah, well, that's why it's worth testing, right? But however, the big question is whether or not it actually leads to anything. You remember years and years ago, we had pilots of the no summer off school year, right? And what's happened since then is that those schools have ended up sticking with that plan, but then it hasn't really expanded beyond anywhere else. If we do actually see an expansion, then you have my attention.
If anyone's offering it to me, I'm very happy to do a four-day week. My producer here, Corey Price, agrees with me. Just so if I get let go, he can get let go with me.
We're going down together.
9:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. We're going to ask you about that, how you feel about a four-day week for kids coming up in just a moment. Quick break for the news headlines. It is an interesting day here in Ottawa. The presidential visit happening. We'll have Joe Biden's address to Parliament a little bit later in the show. Lots more going on as well. Thanks so much for being here. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull. As the Ontario budget was released yesterday, followed up by Merritt Stiles, the leader of the NDP. This was a big spending budget, but one that may be somewhat disappointing to cities like Toronto, like Ottawa. A lot of the money in there allocated to healthcare. We want to get a little bit more analysis of what is in there, what is not, with Marc Desormeaux, a principal economist in Canadian economics at Desjardins. Good morning, Mark.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So what do you make of the budget, generally speaking?
It's clearly a good news story for Ontario. More revenues in government coffers, earlier balance than expected. They actually project a surplus 3 years earlier than last year's budget, a lower debt burden, and ultimately the province is in a better financial position entering the coming economic downturn than we thought it was.
Okay, so tell us about that. How is it feasible to balance the budget on that kind of a tight timeline with as much spending as we see here? It's because what's in the coffers, the revenues are higher than what we anticipated?
Yeah, revenues were apparently underestimated in the fall economic statement that was released in late 2022. There's been a boost to government receipts since then, which puts revenues on a stronger trajectory throughout the forecast period. It's a dynamic we've seen in a few different provincial budgets over the last couple of years. And then in addition to that, the plan builds in some pretty strong and persistent economic and revenue growth in the outer years of the forecast window, which helps reduce its budget's deficits very quickly and ultimately return to surplus by fiscal year 2025.
So you put out some key questions prior to the budget in terms of what you were looking for, what you were going to look at. One of the questions in there, will spending restraint be relaxed? What was the answer that you came up with on that?
The revenue windfall enables more spending than was previously forecast. Mm-hmm. Health and education spending are both expected to increase by over 7% in fiscal year 2024, and then more than 4% in the ensuing two fiscal years, which is quite a significant increase in the rate of growth relative to what was projected a couple of months ago.
Did they do anything to fix a stalled housing market? I guess there's two parts to the housing market, of course, in terms of what's happening with the current climate here in the province and who's buying and who's selling. But then there's also been this push to try to get more housing built and increase powers at municipal levels to make sure that happens and more affordable housing. What did the budget deliver there?
Well, the province is continuing to focus on its housing supply action plan that seeks to increase the supply of available housing within the province. It's of vital importance that the targets be met in that plan because there is a long-run supply-demand imbalance within this province. So there is one across many provinces in Canada, but the supply shortfall is particularly acute in Ontario. And getting that under control, not just in the big cities, but also in smaller cities within Ontario, is critical to ensuring that affordability doesn't continue to be a significant challenge for Ontarians.
There were a lot of asks from municipalities, the City of Toronto talking about certain lines in its budget that were affected by COVID. Ottawa has transit issues. We had the extra costs around the convoy and whatnot. What was the balance that had to be addressed there in terms of if the province says yes to a lot of those requests, where we end up, or are we worse off because the cities are sort of left on their own in this case?
Well, I think I would make a couple of points just looking at sort of the areas that I focus on. One is that there is an increase in infrastructure spending plans relative to the previous fiscal projections. That's in the outer years of the forecast. So that's a positive for addressing some of the shortfalls in that area. But the question right now is whether infrastructure plans around Canada can go ahead as planned, given things like labor shortages and a lack of availability of input products. And we've seen that across a number of provinces where infrastructure plans have been delayed or funding's been pushed out to later years. So there is a question there. The other thing that we look at pretty closely is the response to inflation and affordability. There's a risk in the current environment when inflation is still high that offering broad-based transfers to households and businesses can further stimulate consumer demand and inflame inflation further. So we were encouraged by the fact that support was relatively targeted in this plan. Targeted, and particularly we saw a tax credit for the manufacturing sector that should help small businesses during the upcoming downturn in the economy and doesn't look likely to further stoke inflationary pressures. So those would be the two things I would say, the attention to not further stimulating inflation, and then the infrastructure plans to the extent that they can go ahead as planned should help address shortfalls in those issues.
So you give this budget a pretty good rating as it comes out in a fairly uncertain economic climate, that this maybe does more less harm than good.
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty about the economic outlook. Ontario is particularly vulnerable to the downturn, we think, because of the exposure to housing. We've seen signs of slowdown within the economy. So it was important to keep the powder dry and not further stimulate inflation. But I would just say that the balance over the longer run does rest on a strong and persistent rebound in economic and revenue growth beyond the current year slowdown. And that will be key to returning to balance over the longer run.
Is there anything missing in this budget that you would have liked to see that you think could have had a significant impact?
Well, I think we'll see how the economic environment progresses over the next few quarters. But looking at it in sum, it's good to see that the province's finances are in better shape than we thought, particularly in this period where, we do expect the economy to slow and for Ontario to be particularly impacted by things like rising rates or much higher interest rates and then a slowing U.S. economy.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much for your time, your perspective this morning. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Marc Desormeaux is principal economist in Canadian Economics at Desjardins on the Ontario budget, which came out yesterday, $205 billion worth of spending, but an aim to balance the budget in 2025, despite the fact that that is the largest spending plan in the province's history. And of course, coming at a very uncertain, somewhat difficult time in terms of climate in this province and this country. 9:48 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Our question of the day to you today: what do you think about a 4-day work week or study week for students and staff? A couple of Ottawa area schools will try that in a pilot project. What are your thoughts? We will share some of those on our show as well. We're going to talk about sick days, what you're owed, coming up in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
This is News Talk. Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
9:54 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Question of the day for you today: what do you think of this 4-day work week that will be introduced as a pilot project for students at a couple of local schools? A lot of you texting in on this. Someone says 4-day week is more for teachers. Will their P-day days fall on their day off, or does it mean there will only be 3 days of school? I know a couple of teachers, and PD days mean a day off already. Yes, they work hard, but many people do. Others saying, yes, this is great for the kids and the teachers, a 4-day work week. What do you think? Let us know your thoughts. 580-580. While we're talking about how many days you're in at work or working, let's talk about this. Ontario is going to get rid of temporary paid sick days. This is a measure that was introduced during the pandemic. This is from the Canadian Press on Wednesday, that the program that provided 3 paid sick days to workers during the pandemic will expire at the end of this month. It was a time-limited pandemic measure. The Ontario government introduced paid COVID-19 leave, a program designed to support people who needed to take time off work to isolate or get vaccinated. I've said it before, all of a sudden people who would never take time off because they had basically, cold symptoms were staying home, had to stay home because you didn't know what you might have and if it was COVID. So there was a measure that was introduced by the province to cover this. So what does that mean now in terms of your sick leave? If we've become accustomed to that, how does this kind of change going forward? What are your rights around that and around sick leave? Samara Belinsky is a senior associate at Samfiro Tamarkin LLP and joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Patricia.
So where does this change your sick leave policy? What does your employer sort of owe you? Or is there a provincial baseline for paid sick leave generally when we're not in pandemic times?
So currently, outside of the temporary pandemic measure, there isn't any bare minimum of paid sick leave under the Employment Standards Act, which is the law in Ontario that governs the bare minimum standards, the bare minimum rights and obligations in an employment relationship. So in the past, there have been times where there have been paid sick leave, but right now, under this government, there is not a paid sick leave, other than the one that's going to expire at the end of the month, which again, as you mentioned, is really only specific and related to COVID-19. So over the last couple of years, if somebody, you know, didn't have any sort of sickness related to COVID-19 or reason related to COVID-19 to take this sick leave that could have been up to 3 days, they really shouldn't have been able to access it because it really was just for COVID-19 related reasons.
Okay, so are the rules kind of all over the place then, depending on whether you work for a company that is provincially regulated or federally regulated? We know public servants have access to a lot of sick leave. A lot of companies have sick leave policies. Sometimes they're negotiated by the unions. Is it all over the place depending on where you work or who regulates your employer?
So essentially, it is something that will vary from employer to employer, because it's important to keep in mind that what we're talking about is an absolute bare minimum. So at the end of the month, we're going back to the regular rules. There is no bare minimum of paid sick leave. Having said that, a lot of employers do offer paid sick leave. So if an employee has an employment contract, or the employer has a sick leave policy, which most of them do, that would supersede the bare minimum in the province. So if an employer provides, 1 week of paid sick leave a year, that's what the employee would be entitled to receive.
Is it rare for a company to provide unlimited sick leave? Do you see that infrequently?
It's extremely rare. I would say I've actually never seen unlimited paid sick leave, because I have to make that distinction. An employee can take unpaid sick leave if they are sick, if they require a medical leave of absence. An employee would need to provide a medical note to their employer to substantiate that leave, and then they are on a job-protected sick leave, whether it's a week, 2 months, 8 months, whatever the case may be, their job is protected. They just wouldn't be paid by their employer during that time.
So unpaid sick leave, I guess, would more often be a longer term thing, or it would be in a situation where people are working for an hourly wage. For example, I would imagine if you're a server at a restaurant and you call in sick, typically that you're just not getting paid for the day that you're not in there.
I will say generally in that industry, in the restaurant industry, I don't see a whole lot of paid sick leave. But throughout the pandemic, we have seen more and more employers in that industry and in other industries that, traditionally have not provided sick leave, starting to provide a few days of paid sick leave a year, because it's impacting their staffing requirements. If someone's coming into work sick, getting everyone else sick, they're going to have a problem staffing.
Is this something that an employee should look at, or a prospective employee should look at very closely before they sign a contract or agree to a job? It should be something that's sort of in the negotiating process if you don't see it spelled out for you?
It is definitely a consideration. I would say, regardless of whether you're concerned about sick leave or not, no matter what, if you're starting a new job, or if you are working at a specific employer and they introduce a new contract, as an employee, it's always extremely important to get that contract reviewed by an employment lawyer before you sign anything.
A more frequent situation for a lot of working parents: your kids are sick, you're not. Does that come under sick leave, or is that a different category altogether?
For a lot of employers, they've now implemented language in their sick leave policies or in their sick leave provisions in their employment contracts where a parent can take advantage of those paid sick leave days that are being offered, whether they're sick or their children are sick. So we're starting to see more recognition that those days can be taken in both circumstances.
All right. One more interesting thing to be thinking about for employees out there. Thank you so much, Samara. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Patricia.
Samara Belitsky is Senior Associate at Samfuro Tumarkin LLP. 10 o'clock on News Talk 580 CFRA. Lots of you texting in about the four-day week for students. We'll get into some of that coming up in just a moment. Lots more ahead on our Friday edition of Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
This. There was this letter I read. If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain. If you're not. To Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I like pina coladas. I like them all. That's my problem. It is National Cocktail Day today. There is indeed a day for everything. I like this day on a Friday. That makes a lot of sense. Are you into those classic cocktails? Would you like to think about how to make your own, maybe build up a home bar to be able to do that? Well, we have just the person on the line. Yvonne Langan is here, food and cocktail blogger with Taste and Tipple. Good morning, Yvonne.
Good morning.
Happy National Cocktail Day to you.
Thank you. It's my favorite day of the year.
I love it. I don't even think I knew there was a cocktail day, but I'm going to start celebrating it for sure. So you probably have a pretty good home bar, I would imagine.
Yeah, about 300 bottles. It's pretty well stocked.
Nice. Okay, so a lot of us are probably not going to invest in 300 bottles.
No.
That's a little bit of a commitment, both money and time. But what are the basics that you might want if you just want to be able to, you know, offer up your friends a few choices on the classic cocktail scene? What do you want to make sure you have in that home bar?
Well, I think that there's 10 bottles that I would argue are essential, and you might be shocked by the one spirit that doesn't make my top 10.
Okay.
But I think you have to have London Dry Gin. There's lots of different styles of gin, but the London Dry Gin is really the benchmark for all other gins. Just a classic Tanqueray, Bombay Sapphire, Hendrick's, any of those options are great. A Jamaican-style rum, again, lots of variations of rum, but Jamaican-style is like that classic, fun, funky, great in those pina coladas that you love. And then, of course, the tequila. I like a Blanco or Reposado because it's the truest expression of that agave, nice, grassy, vegetal notes. And then you've got to get some whiskey. I'm a whiskey girl myself, Patricia, so I love myself a little bourbon. But you got to have some rye because it's drier, spicier kind of flavor. Brandy is a must. Don't overlook brandy. And then sweet vermouth and dry vermouth. So if you want a Manhattan, you need that sweet vermouth. If you want a martini, you need the dry. And then like some Amari, which are a style of Italian bitter herbal liqueur. So things like Campari and the Aperol for all those Aperol spritz in the summer. And then orange liqueur, something like a Cointreau is a great option. But the one that doesn't make my list, vodka. I don't think you need to have vodka on your home bar.
Really?
Unless you're an espresso martini lover, because vodka is in very few classic three-ingredient cocktails. We really saw a rise in popularity of vodka in the 80s when we saw things like the espresso martini come into existence, the porn star martini, lychee martinis, apple teenies. Those all have vodka bases, but they're definitely not in the classic cocktail world, more kind of modern classic. So vodka doesn't feature prominently on my bar. Of course, I have it. Because it is a very popular one, but it doesn't bring a lot of flavor experience to the cocktail.
Okay, yeah, interesting. Well, I think some people like vodka because it doesn't maybe bring a lot of flavor experience.
Yeah.
But I do love an espresso martini to finish the evening, but I never make them myself. I always rely on someone else to do that, so I don't need that ingredient. But the old days of, the screwdriver, the go-to
in
university days, that's not a thing that you need to have in your repertoire then.
You know, I think that that's, I wouldn't say that's a particularly well-balanced cocktail. It just tastes like strong orange juice. So I think for things like the Negroni, you know, margaritas, Manhattans, old fashions, you can make all of those things, daiquiris with those 10 bottles that I just listed. You're pretty well-suited. You can make hundreds of different cocktails just with those spirits, but you also need to make sure you've got some bitters on your home bar. So Angostura aromatic bitters, of course, I think most people are familiar with that one. And orange bitters, I would argue, are the essentials because they're kind of like the spice rack for your home bar. So they either kind of help to bind or lift flavors of the rest of your drink.
Okay. One thing I have in my home bar, which is very lacking in terms of how well stocked it is, but the Empress gin so that I can make purple drinks. This is important to me. Is color a thing?
Yeah, that's a great option. And obviously Empress has the butterfly pea extract in it, which is what makes it that beautiful purple color in the bottle. And then when you add citrus, it does change to a pink color. So it is a bit of a fun party trick. And it's a great Canadian product as well.
Okay. So in terms of other things that you need, mixers, is there any particular tool that you have to have, or can you kind of mix everything anyway by hand?
Well, you can always, invent your own solutions for cocktails. If you don't have a shaker, you could use a wide mouth mason jar, and you can just kind of slide that metal disc to the back to help strain out the cocktail without the ice. I do recommend investing in a shaker if you're going to be doing a lot of entertaining or you want to kind of build your home bar. So I would say a double-sided jigger, which is the measuring tool that looks like an open-ended hourglass, I think is definitely an essential because cocktailing is like baking. It's chemistry. So you want to make sure you have the exact right quantity of each ingredient so you get a balanced result. So a jigger, a double-sided jigger is a must, a shaker. I would recommend getting a nice mixing glass because they have a big, heavy bottom, which helps to keep it stable and make sure you're not having your cocktail end up on the floor after all that hard work. And then, a good citrus juicer, bar spoon, and a Y peeler, which is a style of vegetable peeler that looks like the letter Y, and it lets you get a nice wide swath of citrus for those orange peels in your old fashions.
So some cocktails actually do need to be shaken, not stirred.
That's correct. Yeah, so the shaking is really important. A lot of people don't realize that the function of shaking is to make sure that all of the different ingredients, like citrus, syrup, and spirits all have different liquid density. So you got to shake them up real good to make sure that you get a homogeneous texture and you're aerating the cocktail as well as diluting. So that's the function of shaking, whereas spirit-forward cocktails like martinis, Manhattans, and old fashions are stirred because it's almost all spirits. So you don't have different liquid densities that you need to marry up. And you want to get a nice silky mouthfeel by keeping your bar spoon hugged to the wall of your mixing glass as you stir.
And how important is the glass, the end product, what you're serving?
Yes. Well, that really impacts, first of all, how long your cocktail is going to stay cold. So any kind of cocktail like a Manhattan or a martini that are typically served in a stemmed glassware, a martini glass or a coupe glass, they're designed that way so that the cocktail stays cold in the bowl of the glass. And you want to make sure that you're chilling your glassware before you're using it. Other spirit forward drinks like the old fashioned are served in a double old fashioned or a rocks glass. And you're usually going to use one large ice cube because that's important. You don't want ice is also an important consideration. The smaller the ice, the faster it's going to melt. So crushed ice in tiki style cocktails, for instance, is going to melt fastest. And that makes sense because those cocktails tend to be the booziest, even though they don't taste like it, making them quite dangerous. So a highball glass, a coupe glass, a double rocks glass, and a champagne flute, I would say, are the necessities for a home bar.
Okay. Someone's texting in saying, what about Caesars? They're a popular drink. No vodka. Mm-hmm. What about White Russians? So are we sticking with the no vodka?
I've certainly inflamed the masses, I'm sure, with my hot take on vodka. It's just, I don't think you need it, but you can make a great Caesar with tequila or with gin if you like that sort of juniper woody flavor. This is just my hot take. I'm putting it out there. You know, I think that the other spirits bring a lot more flavor dimension than vodka. And that's not to say there aren't good vodkas out there, but, it's each to their own. If you're a person that enjoys vodka cocktails, don't let me stop you.
What
do I know?
Good stuff. What will you be drinking to celebrate National Cocktail Day today?
Oh, that is a great question. Well, there's this big trend going around online right now for espresso martinis that are topped with freshly grated Parmesan cheese. So I might have to try that. And that it does make sense if you think about it, because a little bit of salinity, nuttiness from the Parmesan is a good balance to the spirits in that bitter coffee in there as well. So I might be giving that a try tonight. We'll see if I'm feeling adventurous.
Is it a drink or a meal? That's the question.
I think both, a sip and a snack.
Love it. Love it. Yvonne, thank you so much for the suggestions on the home bar. Would love to go by your place and try to stump you at some point. I'm sure you can mix just about anything up. But have a wonderful Friday, Yvonne. Thank you so much.
Thanks. You too.
That is Yvonne Langan, food and cocktail blogger with Taste and Tipple on this National Cocktail Day. We are going to switch gears completely after the break because, of course, a lot of you are not drinking today. It's a very different day, much more solemn day. We're going to talk about Ramadan coming up in just a minute and the importance of that and how local Muslims here are observing it. 10:19 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
Join the conversation on Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull. Text 580-580 right now.
#10:24 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Lots of texts coming in this morning about sick leave, which industries actually get sick leave now that they're removing that base entitlement at the provincial level that was in place, the 3 days of sick leave that was in place as a COVID measure during the pandemic. Would love your thoughts on this, as well as on a four-day week for students because of this pilot project that's happening in the fall at two schools in the French Catholic Board. So we'll share some of those thoughts as we continue on here this morning. We're going to talk about movies coming up in just a moment as well. But right now we want to talk about something a little bit different, a little bit more important in the moment. The Islamic holy month of Ramadan has started, and we want to look at that, what that means for those who mark that, and why the significance of Ramadan. Luqman Ahmed is here, Imam at Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat Mosque here in Ottawa. Good morning to you.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for having me.
I very much appreciate you coming on. So for those who are still learning about Islam, what is Ramadan? Why is it so important to Muslims?
First of all, as you mentioned, that you know, I'm an imam with the Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat of Ottawa at the Beit al-Nasir Mosque. So on behalf of the Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat of Ottawa, I would like to extend good wishes for myself and say Ramadan Mubarak to everyone who is observing this holy month in Ottawa and around the country. The month of Ramadan, or fasting in the month of Ramadan, is one of the five fundamental practices in the religion of Islam. During this month, following the practice of the founder of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, Muslim adults, men and women, they fast or they stay away from drinking or eating anything from approximately an hour before sunrise to sunset in the evening. And during this time, Muslims, we try to focus more on prayers, more on recitation of the Holy Quran, which is the divine text in the religion of Islam, and improve our spiritual connection with God, as well as engaging in more charitable works for the sake of fellow human beings. Because charity, it's a very important component in the holy month of Ramadan. And generally, when it comes to doing charity, the Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat of Canada works closely with a humanitarian organization known as Humanity First. So whether it is to raise funds, last year, I remember in the month of Ramadan, we raised funds for the displaced people in Ukraine. Mm. Recently, the devastating earthquakes in Turkey, people have been raising money for that. So charity as well, it's an important component alongside fasting.
And tell me about the fasting, what that is meant to do, because the rules are quite strict, right? I guess pregnant women, young children would be exempt from this, but the rules are quite strict around even consumption of water. Is it meant to really focus that spiritual connection when you are fasting throughout the day?
Exactly. That's exactly what it is, how you have put it. You're right that pregnant women, or women who are, breastfeeding their children, or anyone else who is sick, they are exempt from fasting. Basically, for people who are unfamiliar, I would say that, basically in the month of Ramadan, for Muslim adults, again, as you mentioned, the children are not included in this. Adult men and women, their day would start about 2 hours, I would say 2 hours before sunrise, where they would wake up and they have something to eat early in the morning. And their fast begins about an hour and 15 minutes before sunrise, which today in Ottawa was approximately at 5:35 to 5:40 a.m. And after that, once you observe your fast, it is a regular work day for Muslims, no matter which field a person is in. Of course, throughout the day, Muslims offer their five daily prayers. They try to find as much time as possible, for the recitation of the Holy Quran or for remembrance of God. And then in the evening, right after the sunset, that is something which is called iftar, which is when Muslims, they come together to open or break their fasts. And at this time, usually friends and family, they gather together sometimes to have this sort of a feast to open their fast. And in addition to having iftar at homes in the evening times, the Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat of Ottawa has also organized community iftars this month which we will be conducting in our mosque in Beit al-Nasir Mosque on the east end of Orleans. And this will be taking place every Friday and Saturday evening, where all members of community, men, women, and children, they will be gathering at the mosques in order to partake in these community iftars.
All right. Well, I very much appreciate the explanation. I would imagine that at this time and throughout the year, quite a bit of your time is spent dispelling some of the misinformation that is out there about Islam. So I appreciate you coming on, and thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Luqman Ahmed is Imam at Ahmadiyya Muslim Jamaat. 10:30 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. When we come back, it is a Friday. We're going to look at what is ahead in the theater, what is out there, what you might be able to stream as well. We're going to tee up Chatter That Matters, which is on at noon today. Another great guest with Tony Chapman. We'll talk to him in just a bit. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl.
This is Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bowl on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
10:37 on News Talk 580 CFRA. The sun is shining. It is a Friday. If you're not caught in Biden-induced traffic out there, it is a good day, good end to the week. And we want to talk about movies heading into the weekend. Always enjoy doing that, looking ahead to some of the movies that I probably will not watch, but could possibly, maybe, on a given day, watch at some point in the future. Keith Whittier is here, movie reviewer for Ottawa Life magazine. Good morning, Keith.
Hi, Patricia.
Could happen.
How are you?
Could happen. I am very well.
That's a very honest intro. And by the way, I just want to say shout out to whoever's bringing me in with BTS in the background. Thank you so much for that. Much
okay.
Appreciate it.
That would be a shout out to Steve Bunda, who's apparently a huge, huge fan of their music.
Love it. Love it. As we all should be. All right.
Yes. By the way, happy National Cocktail Day as well.
Oh, well, there you go.
I know that doesn't affect you very much. You're more of the popcorn and what do you drink with the popcorn? Diet Coke? Which
Coke
you should.
Zero.
Coke Zero. Okay, that's good. That's acceptable.
Is every day National Cocktail Day with you, I'm thinking?
Every Friday?
Okay.
Maybe
I
a
like
Thursday.
It.
Not
Maybe
Thursday.
A Thursday? Just those days in wise. Okay.
You have to be fair. There's beer day. There's wine celebration. Wine Wednesdays, of course.
Well,
we are here. We like to drink beer, whatever that day is. I don't know.
Listen, you're bringing the people a lot of news, which is sometimes not always great. So sometimes you might need a drink. So
yeah,
I get it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, 10:38 here on News Talk 580 CFRA. Let's talk some actual movies. And this first one out in theaters, this is John Wick, Chapter 4.
You're going to die.
Maybe not.
Goodbye to you, my trusted friend.
A new day is dawning. New ideas, new rules, new management.
We've known each other since we were 9 or 10.
Who is this?
The Marquis de Grammont.
Challenge him to single combat. Win or lose, it's a way out. I don't sit at the table.
Your family does.
Now, here's the thing. Well, we're making confessions as we started off this segment. If you were to ask me, do you like Keanu Reeves? I would say, oh my gosh, I love Keanu Reeves. He's amazing. He's so cool. He's a great actor. He's fine. He's aging beautifully. But I would probably, if you ask me a further question, Keith, as to what was the last Keanu Reeves movie I saw, I would probably have to say Speed, which was a few years back.
Fair.
This is Keanu Reeves starring in this, John Wick Chapter 4. That suggests to me that maybe there's been four of these already.
We don't get anything past you on a Friday. Absolutely. This is the fourth installment of John Wick. So John Wick is basically, when we first met him, he was an ex-hitman. He was retired. He was grieving his wife's passing. And then some people came and let's just say they messed with the wrong guy. And his name in this world just kind of like evokes terror in people who hear it. So, yes, here we are with the fourth installment. And this is great for binging because they all play into the next one. So with this fourth installment, we've got there's this group. It's called the table. And you've got like the head table basically oversees all of these assassins and what have you. And John Wick is going to war with them. So we have all of these assassins who are out trying who are out trying to kill him. And of course, he's trying to, you know, make sure that that doesn't happen. What I find really interesting about this series is you've got polite killers. So, for example, they all stay at this chain of hotels called the Continental, and there are certain rules that they all abide by, like there's no killing on Continental grounds and things of that nature. One of the managers of one of these properties is played excellently by Ian McShane, who plays this character Winston, and he's so distinguished. He's the only person in the whole series that refers to John Wick as Jonathan, and it's just so to do. What makes this film really entertaining, this fourth one in particular, is the action scenes are choreographed so incredibly well. You don't tend to think of Keanu Reeves as like action star. And I know a lot of people will say, well, what about The Matrix? And I will give a lot of the credit to The Matrix to the visionary filmmaking of the Wachowskis as opposed to his performance. But I think Keanu Reeves' performance in this just really suits him. As you heard in that trailer that you played, some of his deadpan deliveries just become so legendary. People will ask him like these big questions and there'll be this dramatic pause and then he'll just be like, yeah, like it's just so ridiculous, but it works. I think the film is shot beautifully well. I think the cinematography is great. Kind of like a James Bond Mission Impossible film. You're going to a whole bunch of different locations and they're all shot very beautifully. I think this is a very entertaining film. At just under 3 hours, it doesn't feel like it because the story flows really well. I saw it in VIP, but you can get cocktails in there, by the way, just so you
know. Good to know.
Speak to your audience. I think this is an incredible movie. I think it's probably one of the best action films I've seen in a long time, which deserves to be seen in a theater.
Okay. By the way, on cocktails, apparently shaken, not stirred is an important component. It actually makes a difference for the ingredients. So just so you know, it's not just a line from a movie. Okay. How would this rate compare to the first three? Does it hold up then?
It definitely holds up. Okay. And that's the interesting thing. Usually by the time we get to the fourth one, it's just, they're just trying to get more money. And of course, it's a business. I'm not naive. But the storyline is still compelling and it's still entertaining. I think all four films are very well done. I'm very impressed with this series.
Okay, so if I wanted to jump into the modern era and actually see a Keanu Reeves movie that was done in the last 25 years or so, would you recommend the first John Wick or would you recommend The Matrix?
I you know what? I would recommend the first John Wick. I think The Matrix films are great, but they're great from a science fiction technological point of view. It doesn't really have anything to do respectfully with his performance. It's kind of like saying that Harrison Ford outshines everything that Lucas did in Star Wars. That's just not the case.
Right.
I would jump in. If you're going to watch the series, I definitely think start with the first one. I know the first two, I'm not sure about the third, is on Netflix.
But Harrison Ford does kind of outshine everything around him all the time, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, we can debate that one.
All right, personal opinion. All right, let's check out this next one. This is also in theaters. This is Inside.
What's happening? Come in! It won't open!
Sorry, man. You're on your own.
In number three. Number three, come in.
Help me! Get me out of here!
All right, this one sounds very intriguing to me, partly because of the setting. This happens inside a luxury high-tech penthouse in New York's Times Square.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is an interesting film. We've got Willem Dafoe as the main and pretty much only star in this film because it's pretty much a one-person show. First, right off the rip, I really like Willem Dafoe. He's in one of my favorite films of all time, The Florida Project. I think he's an incredible actor, and this is a challenging role. So basically, he's this art thief who gets trapped in, as you mentioned, in this apartment, and he basically goes in to steal some art. Unfortunately, the security system turns on and he's locked in there for a significant period of time. Unfortunately for him. So maybe don't rob, I don't know. But anyway, so he's in there and we basically watch, you know, at first he's trying to like figure out how to get out. And now then you're basically seeing him as he's trying to survive like in this apartment where it's not like, you know, the shelves are stocked with food because the owners have gone away for a significant amount of time. So as you're watching this film, there's two ways to look at it. The first way is, I guess, from the artsy standpoint of what an incredible performance in terms of he's not relying on co-stars. It's just basically him. But at the same token, there's another part of you that will feel at the end of this movie, you're looking at your watch and you're thinking, oh my gosh, like how much time have I just wasted? Mm. You know, judging by audience reaction, I saw it with not a huge crowd, but hearing comments as people were leaving saying, I thought such and such was the worst movie I ever saw. Now it's this one. I don't think it's like the worst film. I just don't think it's worth going to the theater to see. I think if you're going to fall asleep watching this movie, you might as well do it at home on Netflix as opposed to going and paying and sitting in a theater to do it.
Right.
I think Willem Dafoe is an incredible actor. I just don't think this is an incredible film.
So even a cocktail is not going to save this one?
No. Okay. No, not at all.
All right. Good to know. The inside track on Inside this morning. Appreciate that. Okay, one more to talk about here. This is 88.
We are one USA. We have raised more money faster than any other Democratic super PAC this election cycle. And we won't slow down until Harold Rountree is in the White House.
I supported you taking that job. Maybe you would help that campaign focus on the real issues.
I've been analyzing contributions to our super PAC, and I started to see patterns.
Patterns?
They're all add-ins of the same number.
What number?
88.
All of it goes back to business interests associated with one organization.
We need to get ahead of this. We're sitting on a time bomb.
Where do we start? Follow the money? I don't think they're expecting to run into Black Rain Man.
This sounds like the absolute perfect movie to be talking about on the day that U.S. President Joe Biden is in Ottawa.
Well, there you go. 88 is a new film from writer, director, producer. What did this guy do on this movie? Aromasay. And basically, it's about this, as it alludes to in the trailer, there's a super PAC that discovers irregularities in financing. And they find that the candidate that they're supporting, which is a gentleman played by Orlando Jones, who's trying to be the second Black president in the United States, finds out that the majority of his financing is coming from a white separatist group. So why in the world would a white separatist group be supporting a Black man to become president? Well, that's kind of where you have to watch the film. I think this is a very interesting film in the sense of, from a political thriller standpoint, usually when I think political thriller, I think of films like The Pelican Brief, and that type of thing jumps to mind. I think this is a very strong movie. It's one of those films, it's an independent film. It had its debut at the Tribeca Film Festival. It's one of those films that doesn't have a lot of top name stars, and I think that's part of the appeal, because I think the real star is the story, as you've got this this financial expert, Femi Jackson, played by Brandon Dixon, who's trying to uncover what's going on, what's behind it, and kind of tracking back like the reasoning behind why this organization is seemingly supporting somebody that you wouldn't think that they'd want to support. So I thought it was a very good movie. It's playing on different streaming services like I guess in the Cineplex store, Google, iTunes, that sort of thing. It's not in theaters, but I thought this movie was very compelling and very different to what we're used to seeing from a political thriller standpoint.
So
I recommend it.
This is a recommend. So John Wick Chapter 4, yes. 88, yes. Inside, no. Stay outside.
Yeah, stay outside.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that.
All right. Good stuff, Keith. Thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Appreciate that.
You as well. You take care.
Well, we are talking about presidential visits. We do have some breaking news for you here on CFRA. We have just learned, CTV News has learned, that Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor are both invited guests to today's Parliament address by President Biden. They will also be invited guests to tonight's gala dinner, that address by the president happening at Parliament at about 1:50 this afternoon. You will hear much of that on Ottawa Now today. We don't know how long that will be. We do know when Obama spoke several years ago, the address was almost an hour in length, so that will be decided. But again, the two Michaels, Spavor and Kovrig, invited guests to that today. 10:50 on News Talk 580 CFRA. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bull.
You're listening to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Steve Paikin is one of Canada's most acclaimed journalists, documentarians, and authors.
At a live event, I asked Steve his thoughts about the state of media, freedom of speech, and can democracy exist in this climate? And why does all of this matter to you?
You don't want to read the stuff that people say to me on Twitter, and they are not holding back. The stuff that will curl your toes.
Yes, the stuff people feel free to say on Twitter. There's a lot of it out there navigating through all of that. Fun time for journalists. Steve Paikin, a renowned journalist who had a chance to sit down with Tony Chapman, or Tony Chapman had a chance to sit down with him at a live event recently. And Tony joins us now, the host of Chatter That Matters. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning.
So tell me about this opportunity to sit and chat with Steve and turn the microphone on him. What was that like?
Well, it was intimidating because it would be the same as talking to you, that when you go to somebody that's truly a professional. But if you listen to the interview, and it was done over dinner, not an ideal time, you can hear a pin drop through because he's so engaging and enlightening. And then every once in a while, a spontaneous outburst of either laughter or applause. And to me, that's a great interview because he takes us behind the scenes. He shares some stories of his favorite interviews, the ones that got away from him. But we also have an honest conversation about this, the world that's so divided, and what happens if media goes away because the economics doesn't support investigative journalism. Who's going to hold the politicians accountable? And he talks about from city council right up to Ottawa. So it's a great conversation, but also some great food for thought about why it's important we have independent investigative journalism in Canada.
Paikin is the anchor of the current affairs program, The Agenda, an excellent interviewer himself. But yeah, very interesting discussion, the relief you feel, and he talked about Twitter, when you go on Twitter and you're clicking on a story that you know comes from a really trusted and reliable source in the Washington Post, the New York Times, whether it's CTV, CBC, whoever your go-to is, but you know it's not just a TikTok video that you're clicking on and hoping maybe the information you get in that is right. It takes a lot of money to support some of the kinds of journalism I'm sure he is talking about doing, and making sure reporters are there to hold the politicians and others accountable. What did he tell you about some of his favorite interviews, or what he takes away from some of the interviews he's done with some of the big world players?
The one that it really struck me that he was talking about, and he set it up with the audience, this is probably my most important emotional interview with someone that didn't speak a word of English. He had to have a translator in the room, and it was Mikhail Gorbachev, and it was just weeks after, you know, the Soviet Union and everything he did to bring peace and try to bring the world together. And the way he just talked about it was just being in the room with somebody that put a dent in the universe. And I know he's interviewed a lot of people, but you could tell that this one really moved him, that he was that close to history in the making. And but on the other side of it, which I think you and I have touched on before, journalism, we like to think it's an easy job and everybody just says you're reading a teleprompter. We also talked about how you have to go through sometimes the most horrific material. You have to synthesize it. You have to sanitize it because it's just too horrific to share with the public. And then you have to deliver it with context. Even though you as a human being has just been gone through the washing machine with it. And he talks a little bit about that as well. And I thought that it's an important thing for us to respect and understand when we're listening to people like you, to recognize that, you know, you put on a brave face at times, but at times that you've seen 10 minutes before you've gone on the air would knock most people onto their back feet.
Serving as a filter in some ways, for sure. And I find this very interesting that he mentions the interview with Mikhail Gorbachev, the final leader of the Soviet Union, because I would imagine that would have been very intimidating going into it, knowing that you have that dynamic of having to go through a translator. And then when it starts to unfold and you get the kind of answers maybe you're hoping for, you feel like, oh, this is a moment. You realize you're in this moment, and then to get to share that with you and your audience is a wonderful thing. Look forward to listening in on this today for sure at noon. Tony, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure. We'll chat soon. Bye-bye.
Tony Chapman is the host of Chatter That Matters. It is a Friday, so you can hear him right here on News Talk 580 CFRA with his guest, Steve Paikin, today. Again, the anchor of The Agenda. Coming up,
CarPlay or Android Auto. Now, Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull continues on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
11:08 on News Talk 580 CFRA. A lot going on today in Canada's capital. It's a busy, sunny, beautiful Friday. It was a wonderful night last night at Canadian Tire Centre. The Senators are making it so entertaining and so interesting down the stretch. If you have not yet been there, we have a chance for you to be in the crowd at the CTC when the Senators host the Philadelphia Flyers on March 30th. Not just you, but you and three of your closest friends. We have a four-pack of tickets to give away to that game. The Senators hosting the Flyers again March 30th. We're going to give those right now to caller number 15. Caller number 15 at 613-521-TALK, 521-8255. Best of luck to you. You will enjoy it, I think. If you haven't been to a Sens game in just a little while, this is not the same team you were watching in the fall. This is a team that rarely gives up. All kinds of effort late, a wonderful high-scoring third period last night. 7-2, the final Ottawa over Tampa Bay at the Canadian Tire Centre. It made it worthwhile going out to the game, Graham Richardson, even though I got caught in a little bit of traffic trying to make my way there.
What?
Despite the fact that we reported on the road closures right through the show, I still got caught in a rolling road closure
and took a longer route. Like, yeah, I'll report
things. You don't
things.
Pay attention.
I'll be covering things about closures, and then I'll get caught in them. Or like, oh, there's snow coming for like 3 days, and then I'll be like, oh.
And then you have no one to blame but yourself.
No one to blame but myself.
An awful feeling. Okay. I always find someone else to blame.
Can I just, like, why didn't they get a split in the West? Why did they lose six in a row in November?
You mean why did they lose that game to Chicago that everyone thought that they would win and, come off that road trip with only one win in five games? And
Give me two, give me three on the West, which is not a tough ask. And then in November, don't blow the tires out and lose a few, but don't lose six in a row. Wasn't it six in a row? It was bad.
They had a really tough skid there for
God,
a bit.
They looked good last night.
I'm happy, but I'm angry. But still not mathematically out of it, which makes it very interesting, down the stretch.
Very
I had a really good seat last night and a really good view of that third period action, which means I'm all in a warm and fuzzy hockey mode this morning, believing anything is possible. As I keep my eye here on the TV screen, news channel on the screen behind you, we have a split screen right now on news channel. So the wife of the Prime Minister, Sophie Gregoire Trudeau, and the wife of the President, the First Lady, Jill Biden, or Dr. Jill Biden.
They're curling.
They are curling. They're out at the Rideau Curling Club, I believe, on a little curling visit. And then the other side of the screen, we have all the other eyes on Parliament Hill, where the president is expected to arrive shortly. He will sit down with the prime minister at, 11:20? So if he's on time, that's coming up in just 10 minutes or so. Bilateral meeting between the two. And then, of course, addressing Parliament this afternoon. In what will be a first after many years, we have not seen a U.S. president address Parliament for several years since Obama did it in a speech
that was close to an hour long.
You're distracted by the curling.
Is she going to throw a rock? I hope she does. This is great.
She looks like she certainly could.
She's having it described to her. Of course, anybody who spends Americans are not massive curlers. She has no idea why. There is so much excitement around here, but she looks interested.
Yes.
Fantastic.
If you are unfamiliar with the sport of curling, it must look really
strange
to you.
But I'm sure
she's seen it.
Until you try to do it. It's hard. It's physical.
It is very hard. It is very physical. It's tough to get down into the, what is it called? The, not the starting blocks. You know what I mean? You get down into the,
squat. Like to throw the rock. I know what
in
you mean.
Position. There's a word that either starts with an H or an R or something.
The hack.
The hack?
The hack?
Yes, the hack.
I got it right.
There you go. I guess I was thinking of rack. The hack.
Yes.
And the sweeping is tough. It's a little bit of cardio going down the ice, and it's the rules are a little bit confusing, too. So, so that's your split screen on news channel today. I think that's a first. Curling and Parliament Hill.
Curling and Parliament Hill. Both. And, which is more interesting? You know what's great when the U.S. president comes? All the celebrities show up, too.
It was a big night last night.
Big night at the Met.
A sighting.
Well, this should have gone.
A Canadian celebrity, though.
Yes.
You would think the American celebrities, I guess they don't care what we're doing up here.
Eugene Levy.
Where was it? Was that at the Metropolitan last
Eugene
night?
Eugene Levy. And apparently our own Colton Prale.
Schitt's Creek.
Yes. Our own Colton Prale was on his break or off. No, he was off having a martini, and he looks over, and there's Eugene Levy.
Yes. I was messaging with Colton last night. He said he could now die happy. I said, well, don't do it yet. You've got a lot of good years.
Yes, he does.
Ahead of you. A little more living to do. But yeah, very, very cool meeting. So he spotted him from afar. And then the next thing you know, oh, there is Colton right up with Eugene Levy.
You know what I would have done? If, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Got him on the show today?
If I
had him on at 6?
Sure. If I had seen him, I would have said, I'm the local news anchor.
Yes.
In the name of Sid Dithers, can I please have a photo? Right?
Nice.
Sid Dithers.
Missed opportunity.
The character that he played in SCTV, the station owner, who's had the big goggle glasses.
Yes.
And the desk was always at his chin.
I wish ours could be up there.
And that was when Eugene Levy, he was Earl Cannon Bear. He was the foil to Joe Flaherty's straight man who was patterned on Lloyd Robertson. In fact, they called him Floyd Robertson, I think. Anyway, classic SCTV. And I'm Earl Cannon Bear.
Right at this moment, I feel like you're older than me, even though you're not.
I used to watch this. Anybody out there who watches SCTV reruns knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I watched it a little bit way back when, but not for a long time.
Johnny LaRue with the boom shot.
Yeah.
Oh, classic. And that was edgier than Saturday Night Live and competing with Saturday Night Live. And some of it was shot in my old station in Edmonton on Allard Way, which is now Global Edmonton.
Very cool.
Yes. Like they have pictures of John Candy. And this was when the show was big. They were shooting in Edmonton for whatever reason, the tax credits in the film industry or whatever. Anyway,
I'm trying to think of a way to pull you back to the presidential address. The only thing I can think of is, okay, edgy. Are we expecting edgy from the president today? Are we expecting very
friendly and genuine and all that? But this is significant, this third-party agreement and Wroxham Road. This is very significant. So Francois Legault has called on Trudeau to shut the road. Quebec has taken 40,000 migrants crossing at Wroxham Road, and normally they took 1,500. So it has exploded. So if I understand this correctly, they have a new third-party agreement, essentially making the border all a part of it. So the incentive, if I understand this correctly, to arrive in the United States and cross at Wroxham Road is essentially gone. And so they will close that. So that will be tremendously good news for the border cities like Cornwall that has taken on, a lot. Like they are full down there, a border city with migrants. And up until now, the Canadian government, Patricia, has essentially said the migrant crisis is a worldwide crisis and we've got to do our part. And it's hard to hear when you're in Niagara Falls and Cornwall and your cities are bursting at the seams with new arrivals who don't speak the language, who are in desperate straits and need social services. So it sounds like there is significant movement here that will, in fact, ease that pressure somewhat, meaning that they won't be coming from America to Canada. Both will be the same.
Yes.
So that's good.
Yeah, it would physically close off the Wroxham Road, that unofficial crossing into Quebec. Details and still to be worked out between the two sides. Yeah. But quite the interesting development. We were speculating earlier in the show, did this come out before they would have liked it to? Was this what they wanted to stand side by side and announce? Is there something else that will be sort of concrete that they will announce at the end of their meeting and this address today? Will be interesting to see.
Yeah.
I think
it was strategic because the LA Times got it on the American side, border city, obviously, with Mexico.
Yes.
And
I wish it was a border city with Canada.
Wouldn't it be great?
That would be life changing.
And it was leaked on the Canadian side to SRC because it's such a huge issue in Quebec. So that looks like a planned leak, if you will.
11:18 here on News Talk 580 CFRM. Continue to be distracted by News Channel, where we have cut away from the curling coverage, which suggests to me that something could be imminent. If the president is on time, on schedule, he is expected to arrive in just 2 minutes from now. So we will continue to keep our eyes on this. Of course, last night while we were live on the air at 6 o'clock, he arrived just a few minutes ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell that he was actually there because he came down in the fog. I couldn't even see.
You could hear it, though, and you nailed it.
But we could hear it.
Live on the air is Patricia Bull welcomes the president.
Not quite. But a really, really cool moment, of course, seeing that that plane and everything that was happening at the airport last night. It's been a while since we've had a visit like this. So
I know you got to go.
It. Yeah.
You know what? I wish Trump did this. Like even though he was to say the least colorful, unpredictable, and a convention breaker, I think this is real. Regardless of party, whether it's George Bush or Joe Biden or Obama,
this should always happen.
I like this. I love American politics. I'm fascinated by it, and I love Canadian politics. And I think seeing all of the players in the same room, either in Congress or in the House of Commons, sends a signal. And I think it's really important. I think it's great.
He would handle himself very well in a walkthrough in the Byward Market, I would imagine.
Who's that?
Trump.
Oh, yeah.
He had the occasion to do so.
Oh, yeah.
Barack Obama made a lot of fans when he went through the market earlier, not expecting to see Biden down here in the market.
Never know.
But you never know.
Never
you never know.
Know.
Coming up to 11:20 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Thank you, Graham. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bolt.
On the go, take News Talk 580 CFRA Ottawa with you. Download, listen, and learn through the iHeartRadio app. Now back to Ottawa at Work with Patricia Bull.
11:25 on News Talk 580 CFRA. Good morning to you. It is Friday. It is the day of the U.S. presidential visit. Probably like a lot of you, we've had News Channel on throughout the day, just listening to Marcia McMillan and Annie Bergeron-Oliver talk as they wait for the president to arrive. He's just a few minutes late arriving at Parliament Hill. Was scheduled to arrive at 11:20 this morning. They're talking about the beautiful weather today and how much better the city is showcasing itself today than it did late yesterday when Air Force One touched down at the Ottawa airport about 6:20 or so last night. But I just heard Marcia ask Annie, well, why is he late? Maybe he's stopped somewhere else. Maybe he's in the market. Quick shoulder check here over my shoulder at 87 George.
I think we would notice.
He's not here.
He's not
he ain't here. No. Not expected to come here and certainly would not make a stop for a beaver tail, I don't think, right before his address to Parliament. That would be unlikely.
I remember when Obama did that. I didn't believe it because, you know, these rumors go.
Oh, yeah. I remember
right?
it well.
And then the place just went nuts because he did it.
Everyone poured out of this building to go next door. It was right. It's a building that's right next door, that Byward Market building on William, where he stopped in and had a chat with the owner behind the counter and got the what we now call the Obama cookie.
Right.
Which is a $17,000 cookie that you can purchase in the market still.
What?
It doesn't cost that much, but it's expensive.
Is it?
Yeah, you have to pay. Yeah, it's a lot of dollars per bite for that.
That was when he landed and said to Michaëlle Jean, I'm so popular I could get elected in Canada. And she just laughed. It was a great shot of the two of them.
Oh, yeah. He certainly could get elected in Canada.
Yeah.
Super popular. I was thinking, you know, we were talking about Mark Sutcliffe, newly elected mayor, being out there yesterday, maybe having a chance to meet the president, and that kind of moment where these are people who are very well protected and it's a very tight circle and it's pretty rare that you have that opportunity. I've never met a U.S. president myself, but I did get a chance to meet the First Lady, former First Lady Michelle Obama, when she was here. You do have that moment of this is someone you've watched and listened to for years and this very unique role in what they do. And you have that moment where it's, wow.
Yeah.
It's actually her.
Like they are super celebrities, right? They are super celebrities.
It's
a different level of celebrity. You know, their movements, what they say, they run the most important country in the world, the biggest economy in the world. And so, it's a different level. And when you're in their presence, it's a bit much, right? Like it's a big deal.
You see all of that, everything that's around them. And then it's amazing. There are so few really great orators anymore. But whether you liked Obama or not, I think you have to acknowledge he was an incredible public speaker. And I wish
Absolutely.
I had pulled up the address that he did to Parliament at that time, because I was reading this morning that it was almost an hour. I don't recall it being that lengthy. But then obviously you have a lot of people, a lot of hands on whatever you say at that level. But always his own personal touch in what he said and how he delivered it. I would imagine Joe Biden might not speak for that long today.
Maybe not. Different style. All American presidents are incredibly gifted politicians, no matter what the party is, because you cannot succeed there, especially now, without having tremendous skill. And part of that skill is communication, a huge part of it.
All eyes are on this. Again, I don't think we're going to see the president actually pull up before we get to the news. So we're going to take a quick break here for the news headlines. When we come back, Matt Scooby is going to join us. And then we are going to talk to someone I know you like very much, Graham Arthur Milnes, who's a Canadian presidential historian and author, on just what the dynamics are that go into a meeting like this one between leaders, why it is so important, and what some of those big moments have been in past meetings between U.S. presidents and Canadian prime ministers. Some have liked each other very, very much, and some have not been quite as close, which sometimes creates the more interesting moments through the years. We're going to get into that coming up in just a moment. This is Ottawa at Work. I'm Patricia Bowl. Quick break for the headlines. We'll be back with the president, perhaps, on the other side.